Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the May 6th edition of Commodity Week. In Chicago, new crop corn gained 40 cents on the old crop. Well, at least it closed the gap. We'll find out why today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. I am Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Extension agronomist from the University of Illinois, Emerson Nafziger. Our panelists in studio today include Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana. And Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's start our program with this question today. Dan Zwicker, what was the reason or reasons that the market moved sharply lower in old crop down 71 and a quarter cents this week?
Well, that's where some of the bigger positions were. And I mean, this week was an example of one market getting into problems and increased margin calls, and then that spilled over into several complexes. So a lot of this week's action was long liquidation. You can kind of look at it on the open interest levels, but it kind of looks like at least some of that has been pretty well exhausted for now.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities?
Well, I think Dan hit on the main parts that way, Todd. It was fund liquidation. We've seen tremendously large open interest by the funds. And when they go to the door, nobody's big enough to stop them and hold this market in place. But the fundamentals really haven't changed much, but the prices sure have.
And Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
Any of the statements about the commodities are Paul Cooley's opinion and not necessarily ADM Investors. But it was a major market panic in the silver market that spilled over into the other commodities. The margin requirements are almost unprecedented in the liquidation that took place in the commodities. Crude oil, gold, silver, it even started to affect the stock market, corn, soybeans, and wheat. And it was major, and it did spread across a lot of commodities. One excuse even was that they were surprised the EU didn't raise interest rates, and we saw tremendous problems in the currency market as well. So it was a combination of world currencies and also the silver market that beat up the commodities, particularly on LaSalle Street.
I want you to exclude silver for just a moment. We heard one of you, I think Wayne, say that fundamentals really hadn't changed at this point. So exclude silver. Have the fundamentals for old crop or new crop corn changed in your mind this week in any way?
Well, old crop corn continues to struggle in a sense. Demand has softened up. USDA's March report says we only have so many bushels. We're not going to really know on that one until about June 30th. But for the time being anyway, it's hard to kind of move old crop corn into the export market. You can kind of look at the fall off in export demand that we've seen. There's really no shortage of cash corn. You can buy cash corn. So some of that maybe has softened a little bit. But actually, some of the fundamentals on new crop are actually maybe turning more friendly due to the planting problems that we're having across the growing region.
I'd have to agree with Dan. We have softened up as far as the corn exports have gone along the way. We have kept going very, very strong and very hard on ethanol usage of corn for ethanol that way. The new crop, you know, if you live over in Indiana, you aren't seeing any corn up. You aren't seeing any tractors running. The weather forecast looks really rough. And on Friday morning, it was actually even wetter for the second week out there. And that doesn't bode well for getting in the first 20 days of May.
And, of course, in the export world, there is a basic supply of wheat in the world, and that could become, if it's not either exported or used in milling, it becomes a feed grain, the old Tom Hieronymus basic Econ 101 class.
Okay, Paul, so let's go back to silver and the problems that are taking place in that marketplace. You watch it every day. I don't. Tell me about it, what's happened, and what looks familiar to you from past experience.
Well, it reminded me a lot of the old Nelson Bunker Hunt brothers of days in which they tried to corner the silver market, and they finally raised the margin requirements. And the Hunt brothers liked to play pretty wild, and they had a lot of oil wells, racehorses, and lived pretty good, but they couldn't meet the margin requirements, and silver went to 50 cents and $50 an ounce, and they finally broke the market. But this one had all the characteristics of advertising, increase in margins. We listened to the chairman of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, Bart Chilton, this morning, and, of course, he seemed to be very upset that it caused this ripple effect and cost the American farmer, in my opinion, at least 50 cents a bushel in corn and soybeans, and cost the whole trading community and created trading chaos this last week, unfortunately, to the whole system.
You think it's a permanent 50-cent loss, or is it just because there's so much liquidation
the
happening
history
all
is,
at once?
Is once you spank this market this hard, it's hard for it to come back to life.
Anybody else want to take this one up?
Well, it takes enthusiasm out of it, but I think what the key will be to watch next week and see how much stabilization comes into the market. That's the first thing that we're going to have to see.
And quicker, too, Dan, right?
Yeah.
Quicker, the better.
If we see some stabilization and then we can get through all this margin problems that's basically been created throughout the complex, then the market will get back focused more on the day-to-day fundamental type thing, and we'll see what happens.
Let me see if I can summarize this correctly. So the idea here is that if you look at the chart for the silver, that it has just exploded to the upside, that there may have been several players that were – I'm not going to say they were hoarding yet, but there may have been several players that had a whole lot of silver contracts, and that somebody said, this is squeezing the market. We've got to liquidate this, and they started to put margin calls in at a much higher and more rapid pace, and telling them earlier that the margin calls were coming, despite the fact that the volatility in the market wasn't there. Started liquidation, and it was a lot of money across lots and lots of commodities.
We've got so many exchange-traded funds now that's in the stock market. You've got index funds with all kinds of portfolios, and if you hammer one market really bad, then that spills over into liquidation of other commodities to meet margin calls or absorb losses, and that's basically what happened.
And of course, we don't have any of the facts. We're all just kind of looking at rumors and what we're hearing, so we may be way off. We may be somewhere close on target.
You know, the real story is the markets did go down substantially, and it wasn't the market fairy that did it.
And nor was it the fundamentals in the corn market, apparently, which this week, by the way, had
Todd, we do know that it was the funds liquidating every day. We have the reports of saying, you know, who did what. You know, we get a report every day of the player's sheet, and it says the funds liquidated so many thousand contracts today. So we do know that it was large fund liquidation at this point in time. We can't tell you why they did, whether it was a black box, whether it was a computer thing, or whether it was margin calls, but we can say they were liquidating.
May corn this week, 757 and three quarters the high, the low at 677 and a half. A settlement price down 71 and a quarter, $6.82 and three quarters the settlement price. December corn futures at 640 and a quarter, down 29 and a quarter. You'd like to see it heal quickly and consolidate, maybe start gains. Do you think that's possible next week?
Well, a couple things we'll be watching, of course, with a great deal of intensity of the weather forecast. Our general impression is that there will be a weekend rain and then another Thursday rain event, and that's going to tell us a lot. The Informa Sparks people came out and said there was a 300,000 or 400,000 acres less planted acres in corn potentially, and of course that arithmetic I agree with.
You think there'll be fewer planted acres for corn too?
Yeah, but I'm a little more aggressive on my taking off these flooded acres. How many acres have we taken out just on the
levees
that they've blown down along the Mississippi, and those aren't going to get planted. They'll get unprevented planting.
Yeah, my guess is that we do have a USDA report, I think, on Wednesday.
Yeah, the WASDE numbers.
The shorts in the market are going to want to start covering, so I think that's going to help bring some stability into the marketplace. That we're going to get the first shot at some supply-demand tables for the next year, what USDA thinks based upon the March planting numbers. But, yeah, I mean, I at least the way I see things, I think Sparks is very conservative, or Informa is very conservative on acreage loss, at least from what I look at it here on May 6th, May 7th.
Okay, as much as we've talked up front about the speculators, we're going to skip the Vegas the Vegas numbers for the old crop corn at this point that farmers have left, and we'll deal with a new crop at 640 and a quarter. Do you think that 30, 35 cents is still left in that marketplace? Will they have another opportunity up at that 670, 680 market?
My guess is there will be. We haven't got the crop planted yet, and the demand is still awfully strong as you look ahead. So I think new crop pricing opportunities are still in the cards, but they do need to look at it from a statistical point of view. A lot of highs are made between May 1 and July 1, and you have to kind of play that game.
I can remember, too, when you rain, and then it stops raining and turns too dry, and I even asked my weatherman about that scenario. But Dan's right. It's going to be a volatile spring and summer.
You think it'll come back to those levels?
We're going to get back to 650, maybe 660. We're going to have a weather problem of some sort. I think, as Paul mentioned, it is going to have to turn dry to take us on up to the 685 to $7 mark.
Informa did drop the numbers for USDA planted, or for planted acreage, not USDA planted acreage, but their own, on corn by 300,000. They dropped soybean number by 600,000 acres. May beans this week had a high of $14, a low at $13.85. Settlement price at $13.25. We're down 67 and three quarters. November's at $13.85. We're down 65 and three quarters. If they don't have the planted corn acres, do you think they can really lose that many soybean acres too?
Well, we probably won't, Todd. We'll probably plant a few more beans along there, but they might be later planted beans than what they would normally be. The other thing about this market is it does seem to make a little more sense that beans sold off a little bit with South America's big crop and also China's way of controlling their economy and their food prices a little bit by holding the price down on the oil and keeping their crush levels down, and them coming out and staying out of the market basically for the last 3 weeks.
How long ago do you think rationing began in the bean market?
Well, we've really never had to ration. I mean, because the South American crop came on strong, so we really didn't have to do severe rationing in the U.S.
market. So it
would have been
November, December, January, and then when we started to get to...
There was no doubt demand slowed, but we did not do any severe rationing because the South American crop...
You can tell me I'm wrong. It's okay.
Dan and I work for the same company, and I agree with you on that. But no, Dan's very close to that. We'd like to second-guess him, but I'm not going to because he's got the right answer.
All right. So then next week we do have the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates that are due out. Dan, you mentioned them. What will they show for the corn market?
I think it's going to show a very tight balance sheet. You know, my guess is they're going to want to use a trend line type yield on corn. They'll keep the acres the same because they have no real statistical reason to change those acres. But I think you could maybe see some back off on export demand, but ethanol demand is going to be awful strong and domestic usage strong. So I think you're going to see some very tight numbers.
Well, I think that he's right. I think the old crop carryover could on corn is going to be unchanged, and I think the bean could be maybe 10 million larger.
Anything that you're looking for in the way of a surprise next week from USDA?
Surprise. I think that they will leave the acreage the same in this report. So I think that'll be a surprise because we think it should be reduced.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This one was recorded on the 6th day of May, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. In just 2 minutes, we'll return and we'll talk with Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist from the University of Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Although the rain backed off for most of Illinois this first week of May, the temperature side of the equation took a turn for the worse. Temperatures this week ranged from 3 degrees below normal in eastern Illinois to 9 degrees below normal in western Illinois. Fortunately, we did have some sunshine this week, which did help with that situation. Temperatures on Wednesday morning reached freezing and below in the northwestern third of Illinois, and scattered frost was observed through central and south-central Illinois as well. Temperatures began a slow bounce back on Thursday. The northern two-thirds of Illinois was fairly dry this week, with only light and scattered amounts of precipitation. Southern Illinois continued to be pounded by rain through the early part of the week. The area enjoyed 2 rainless days before showers and some thunderstorms returned with the passage of a cold front on Thursday night and Friday. The second week of May holds some promise for those waiting to get into the fields. There may be a few scattered showers around on Monday, but for the most part, next week should be relatively dry and much warmer. Rain isn't totally out of the picture, however, as a cold front could trigger scattered showers and thunderstorms across the state Thursday into early Friday. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the May 6th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Dan Zwicker from ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. On the phone line with us, Extension Agronomist from the University of Illinois, Emerson Nafziger. Emerson, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. We do appreciate that. Tell me first about some of the statistical work that you've done in the past and how hybrids have changed and maybe how quickly their yield falls off with planting date.
Well, I'd like to just pull out some magic formulas and tell you exactly what's going to happen, but I'm not going to do that. Yeah, I think we all understand that no 2 years are ever the same, and all we can do is make some sort of semi-serious stabs at what might happen. We are starting into the period of yield loss acceleration here, but we're not moved very far into it yet. I'm really encouraged that Steve Hilberg's, you know, not playing the same loop that we've heard for the last 3 weeks, and that is, well, it's just going to keep raining. And we're all interested not only in stopping raining or at least slowing down, but getting these temperatures up because our drying rates have been so slow. The good news is that we've had a lot of planting activity in western and northern Illinois. My variety testing guys told me yesterday they've got 6 of their 12 locations planted all through that western and northern part of the state. And they reported also they had seen a great deal of planting going on this week in that area. Here in east central Illinois, of course, we really haven't seen very much yet. But it's the end of the first week in May. It's not past a planting window by any means. And when temperatures get back up into the 70s and even 80 degree range, why, that means drying rates accelerate a lot. And my fondest hope is that we can start moving this planting a little bit faster. If you took everything that we've done and said, okay, how much yield have you lost if you can plant by, let's just say, May the 10th, that's not very many bushels. And we all know from just 2 years ago when we had very late planting in 2009 that if it keeps raining the rest of the season, you can almost turn any planting into a good season. And we certainly saw that year. But our planting date studies in 2009 actually indicated that we probably lost more yield in 2009 than we think we did. We had a statewide average of 174, but if you look at our planting date study, we probably, if we could have planted on time in 2009, would have had something in the 190 range or even higher than that. So when it keeps raining during the season, we will get good yields if we can get the crop planted.
Doctor, thanks for being on Commodity Week, and of course you're quoted in the commodity office in Oakland quite a bit, and we like your work. But, you know, the modern cash grain farmer in Illinois likes to plant a lot of corn. Where is the next big yield breakthrough? It's not going to come from the corn planter. Is it going to come from the seed, or what's going to happen to make the next big yield boost in the corn and help the farmer have continuous corn?
Well, okay, I probably wouldn't be sitting here if I knew that. But it's a good question, but one that I don't have a ready answer for. We don't have any idea, any indications that the ability to genetically continue to improve this crop has played out at all. But the next big jump, I don't know. Honestly, I'm not sure there will be one. If we can get steady progress upwards of 3 bushel a year for the next 20 years, I think we probably are going to be fairly happy with that. As we improve these things that can be improved, both the genetics and the agronomics, we increasingly put the fortunes of this crop in the hands of what kind of weather we're going to get. And as good as our soils are and as good as our average weather is, that means that we're going to see things like we saw last year, where a great start to the season and the best genetics and the best agronomics we could bring to bear ended up with some fairly disappointing yields in some fields just because it rained too much in June. So I don't like to be pessimistic, and I think, this is a good time for optimism as we head into this with the price and so on. But I don't know if we've got something we can clearly point to and say, well, you know, we're going to have a different plant type and we're going to have 50,000 plants per acre and we're going to harvest 300 bushel just as a routine matter. I've been around long enough that I saw our yields move from 100 to 180. And so I'm never going to say never, but it's not clear from everything we know that this march is just going to continue to go upward and even accelerate upward. I don't think I'll be around when our state average yield hits 300.
The corn that was planted in early April, it's still not up or just barely coming up, that sat in this real cold ground. Do we have enough vigor in the seed nowadays to make that make it, or is it going to have to be replanted?
The corn that got up is going to be okay, I think. There could be some little bit of physiological effect. We don't honestly know enough to say that with any certainty, and I'm going to go with the idea that if it warms up now, that corn is going to spring to life and come on growing well. Where it's a little bit of concern about some of the stands of corn that was planted about the middle of April, just before the deluge set in. It took up some pretty cold water, and we've heard a few reports of twisted seedlings and so on that in most cases they're simply not going to get out of the ground. People should accumulate growing degree days from now back to when they planted. If they're above 120 or so, they need to be digging these seeds up and seeing whether they are still viable and whether they're still going to come out of the ground.
You mean less than 120 as opposed to above?
No, more than 120, because by 120 they really should be up.
Oh,
and
I,
if they're not up by 120, then we need to find out if they're going to come up. I think that some of the fields, realistically, are probably going to be replanted. I wouldn't do it just if it's uneven coming up, if it looks like all the seeds are going to come up. But this chilling injury generally shows as a sort of twisting and leaping out underground and excessive root proliferation, and a lot of those plants are never going to see the light of day.
So that's probably something that maybe was put into ground the 14th, 15th of April?
That's correct, yep.
Yeah. You've traveled around the globe quite a bit, and you talked about maybe bumping. You've seen us go from 100 to 180. You don't think you'll see us go to 300. Will China or Ukraine or other places around the planet be able to manage that kind of increase, the 100 to 180?
The water becomes the real limitation. In northeast China, their climate is a limitation, and water's part of it. You know, nobody in the world has the combination of soils and rainfall that we have here. And so it's hard. I think they'll move upwards and probably fairly steadily as they improve genetics. But I've been in the Ukraine a few times, and, you know, they can simply get a good start to the season, and then it's 100 degrees and doesn't rain for 3 weeks in July. And it does to the crop there just exactly what it would do to the crop here.
Emerson, one final question for you. In a recent article on the Bulletin, you wrote that there wasn't really any reason for a producer to switch from corn to soybeans until very late May or early June. You still holding with that?
I think so, yes. Optimistically, we'll hope that we're just done planting by the 25th or so, and I think the comment was made earlier about some prevented planting. There's probably going to be some of that, but yeah, I don't think anybody has much of an inkling to change at this point, and I would certainly not suggest they do so.
Thank you so much. Emerson Nafziger is an extension agronomist at the University of Illinois. Now a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Paul Cooley, ADM Investor Services.
Tomorrow I wish I'd be in Louisville, Kentucky at the Kentucky Derby, but I'll probably be mowing grass.
And Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
The WASDE report this week is going to give us a real indication of whether this market's going to recover or not, Todd.
And Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Keep an eye on the dollar. The dollar did close out the week with some pretty strong positive technical action. See if that's got any follow-through next week.
Again, our thanks to the panelists in studio. They include Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Emerson Nafziger, of course, on the phone line, extension agronomist from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. You can hear this program anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find everything from our pre-opening market report to the closing market report, each and every business day of the year, and a way to subscribe to our weekend newsletter. It's all at willag.org. Get in the field when you can. I'm Todd Gleason.